games, a six-point cushion. We're very nearly there in the Championship campaign. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you in association with Coleman's of Norwich. I'm Connor Southwell, joined by Adam Harvey, amongst some, the colleagues are dropping like flies at the moment, but we've managed to pull ourselves to the Pinken Towers here to bring you a podcast in the wake of Norwich City 1, Bristol City 1 at Carrow Road this afternoon. Probably one of those games I think a lot of people will be pretty keen to brush off pretty quickly, so I don't think it's one we'll delve on to. Fortunately, we've got a whole host of talking points to consider in this week's show. Thank you, whether you're watching, whether you're listening, for joining us, putting us in your ears or whatever, and of course your support is much appreciated. We're here every week. We do our best to do so, win, lose or draw, and sometimes you have to deal with the hand that you're dealt, and we are dealt with a 1-1 draw in the circumstances that we got today. So there we go. Adam, how are you? Just me and thee. It's an interesting afternoon at Carrow Road today.
Yeah, I suppose a twinge of disappointment. You know, I think given kind of you looked at the West Brom result prior to kick-off, you know, there was an opportunity for Norwich to move fifth. I think we've had the discussion about kind of whether that actually means a lot in the sort of wider context of the playoff race. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm sure David Wagner and these players will want to finish as high as possible, you know, keep the momentum building, heading into the playoffs. But I did feel today would be the toughest fixture of the lot they've got left. I know Birmingham, you know, I think they drew today at Rotherham and they might still be sort of hoping to survive on the final day. So I don't really want to be going to St Andrews requiring any form of result, really. But I think, you know, it's one of them where Bristol City were a good side, Norwich were made to work, and probably in the end, point was fair. Maybe Bristol City could have edged it given kind of a few chances they had at different points. And, you know, Angus Gunn, as David Wagner pointed out in his post-match reaction, best goalkeeper in the Championship, and he made a couple of really crucial saves to secure a point, which, you know, obviously as we kind of mapped out, given the teams that are below Norwich and the results, that still could be a really big point in the wider, you know, sort of result, I suppose, of this season. So, mixed feelings, maybe a minor missed opportunity, but other results probably made it feel maybe, you know, less of a blow than it could have been.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And I'm going to, you know, offer, I'm going to peer back the curtain for the viewers, break the fourth wall. But often after you know, a display like that, it's really difficult to put questions to managers and to David Wagner for his thoughts and reflections, because, you know, you've only got as much questions to ask really as the material you have. And there wasn't a whole host of material in there beyond Norwich City being slightly off colour. And you know, I did ask him at one point, is this just a performance that in a 46 game season, I think he pointed out that Norwich have played 50 games now this season. I think today was their 50th. Is it just a sort of a game you have to shrug off? And I think it probably is, isn't it? Because of the volume of games, the intensity of games, they've just come through a really hectic period. There's obviously the element that this was the first Carrow Road game after the East Anglian Derby. And I just felt there was a kind of after the Lord Mayor's show about it all, even amongst sort of the fans, the whole place felt quite flat. And like you say, add in a Bristol City side who are not just in form, but came to Carrow Road today and I thought did a better job than anyone has done really in for a while, maybe since Southampton actually. So fitting that they left for a point. It's I don't know, David Wagner felt it was just one that doesn't need to be overanalyzed, that could be shrugged off pretty quickly. I mean, are you of that view? It's probably a good job that they got this type of performance out of the way at this stage.
Yeah, I think given obviously they've got back-to-back home games, you know, a big opportunity again next week. End against Swansea, obviously Coventry and Hull meet each other this week as well. So I think they, you know, could be another big opportunity next Saturday. And you do get these results, you know, it is the Championship. It throws up bonkers results left, right and centre. And you're not going to win every single home game. Norwich have won 8 straight games at home. You know, let's face it, that's still a pretty good run. And it is basically the run that's meant that they are where they are in the table. So, you know, fatigue at this stage of the season is going to be natural. You know, we've kind of had the discussion around maybe limited options off the bench at different points and these players being pushed to their match sort of minutes and their sort of stamina's being tested, I suppose, at this stage. And, you know, they've had obviously a week since that big result over Preston. I think that maybe now looks like a really big result in sort of the playoff chase, given that, you know, that was a massive 2 extra points that Gabriel Sarr earned them at Deepdale. And you look at now the table and where Norwich could have been if they didn't have those extra 2 points, they'd be on 70. Obviously, Hull would then be on 66, win for them during the week against Coventry, and they're 1 point behind Norwich. So then it, you know, becomes a little bit more on edge. And I think, you know, that's not a comfortable position that anyone would have wanted to have been in. But I think, you know, what they've done is being consistent, and you will get these results, and a point's better than none. So I think that's probably the way you've got to look at it now, heading into 2 more big games, but I think 2 very winnable games on paper.
Yeah, I mean, I was always told when I used to play back in the dark ages, not very high level. If you couldn't win a game, to not lose it. And actually, it's interesting. I've only sort of delved. It's been pretty hectic post game, but I've only sort of delved onto social media, and it's interesting that there's kind of a lot of discourse around that probably being a game that Norwich would have lost 3 months ago. And actually, I think that's probably a fair reflection of it. And for me, what felt important was how quickly they responded to that opening goal, because I think there was certainly a feeling from me that if that game would have been allowed to sort of continue and Bristol City had a one goal lead, they were pretty adept at keeping the ball. They were pretty comfortable in those type of situations. They were structured. They were well coached under Liam Manning, which shouldn't be a surprise to anybody who's sort of followed his career up to this point. It probably shows where this squad is from a mentality perspective that they were able to respond so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of go back to those moments, maybe the last defeat at Carrow Road, that Blackburn game, and just how easily they folded under the pressure. And let's face it, Bristol City were a good side. You know, we mentioned it. You know, they created a lot of opportunities. They cut through Norwich at different points. Their press was excellent, and they are probably one of the most impressive sides I've seen at Carrow Road all season. And you know, I think Norwich, for large spells, probably still managed to nullify them. I know, obviously, they had these opportunities, but you know, they had obviously the players at the right time in the right places for blocks. Gunny obviously saved them a few times. The crossbar, of course, as well, at a couple of occasions. So, yeah, I think it's one of them where you've got to look at it and go, you know, as you say, you know, I think it probably would have been a game, go back, you know, to that kind of run in November. They would have lost probably, you know, in a similar vein to what they'd done against Blackburn. So it has come a long way, and it could still, you know, could still be a very valuable point in the wider sort of running for this season. Yeah, I just got to brush it under the carpet. I think David Wagner was of that opinion, and I'd probably be of that opinion. I think most people on socials are not being sort of overly reactive to it either, in the sense that they can see it. You know, it's just they've had a, you know, difficult run of games. They've come through them. They've still put themselves in a good position, and they're still in, you know, the driving seat. And that's where you want to be heading into these final two games. You don't want to be a Hull or a Coventry where, you know, all right, they've got these games in hand, but the reality is it's still in Norwich City's hands. If they get more points or match the points of those sides, they'll be the side that's in the playoffs, you know, heading into the final day. So, yeah, disappointment, but let's, you know, rub it under the carpet, we'll push it under the carpet and move on to next week.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, let's have a quick word, because, I mean, we've kind of brushed around it, but Bristol City, I thought, you know, you look at some of the sides that have come to Carrow Road of late, Rotherham, we could list others. I thought Plymouth were okay in patches, but nothing to really write home about. Even in the run in sort of January, when they had Hull and they had West Brom and Coventry in pretty close succession, I thought Bristol City looked a better side than any of those that have come to Carrow Road. And, you know, you were at the pre-game press conference, I wasn't, but it was interesting that David Wagner kind of identified them very, very quickly as a team that he feels will be in the contention for the top six next season. It almost feels like this run has probably come a little bit too late for them, because you know, they mathematically can't get into the top six. I think they were, before this game, one of four teams that were absolutely guaranteed to be playing Championship football next season, and one of those is Portsmouth, who have won promotion from League One. So that goes to show how open a league is. And it's interesting, because the debate, looking at this two probably games together, the Bristol City and Swansea home leg, kind of felt like there was a lot of shrugging. Oh yeah, cigar in, that'll be nice and easy, because those teams will be on the beach. But actually, what that can create is a freedom within teams. You can almost play with a freedom, and your shoulders can be broader. You can try things with the ball. You know, you're not as pressurized in terms of making mistakes, because the games aren't magnified to the extent that they are for other teams. And I probably felt that today, because Norwich went after Bristol City in the way that they have, and there were a point, particularly in the first half, where Norwich were just beginning to build up a little bit of a spell of pressure, and we've seen teams who have come to Carrow Road of late just sort of crumble, just retreat, just go deep and compact. Bristol City didn't do that. They stuck to a game plan. They were brave. They put a high block on Norwich. They went to press them high. They went to stop them at source. And they got rewarded for that, you have to say. They created turnovers. They created probably more opportunities at Carrow Road than anyone since maybe that Blackburn game, or probably that Southampton game in isolation. So, yeah, it's not going to be the theme of the pod, but I think it is worthy to say a lot of the reason why Norwich City were off colour today was partly because of what the opposition and Liam Manning did today.
Yeah, I've been quite impressed with them, actually, in sort of the recent form table. It shows well, you know, they are one of the best sides in the division. I had a, you know, pleasure of speaking to a Bristol City fan prior to this game, and he kind of made the point about the performance levels being much better. They're sort of a style maybe that they didn't have under the likes of Nigel Pearson. You know, they had lots of young talent, and they're one of these clubs that, for me, invest in young players, they develop them, then try and sell them on, and it's then about how you sort of reinvest that money. And I think they've done that pretty smartly. You look at kind of the summer recruitment they made last summer, and you know, you look at the likes of Jason Knight in the midfield, looks like a really tidy player. Rob Dickey, you know, lots of experience at QPR, and he looks like a real central defender and someone who's comfortable on the ball, which obviously for what Liam Manning's trying to do in terms of possession is spot on. You know, and I think there's a sort of common theme throughout their side. Tommy Conway looks like a real threat. I think there's obviously a little bit more development in his game required, you know, maybe a few sort of rash decisions when it comes to sort of the final third and what he does with it. But he's 21, so that, you know, that's something that needs to be coached. And I think David Wagner's right. They definitely are going to be a side that's going to be up there next season, I think, in and around the mix, particularly given you look at kind of the sides that will drop down next season, maybe versus the quality of this season. I know, you know, these sides at the top are maybe faltering a little bit at the end, but the reality is their points tallies don't lie. You know, they are sides stocked with Premier League quality players, and you know, no disrespect to the likes of Sheffield United or Luton, it feels like maybe the quality level's a little bit lower. So I think Bristol City have got themselves an opportunity next season. If they have to sell any players in the summer, no doubt they'll, you know, bring in a high turnover of financial opportunity in terms of them to go and reinvest. And I think they, you know, they are very smart in that. And they almost remind me a little bit of Norwich in the sort of 17-18 season under Farker, where you could maybe see what they were trying to do. Yeah. They've got some real quality players in the ranks. It's just about trying to unlock them and maybe add that. They probably lack a little bit of experience. I know on the bench they had the likes of Naki Wells and sort of these players like James that are, you know, full Cornick, of Cornick. Yeah. Yeah, lots of experienced players, but maybe just a couple more in there, and sort of particularly for sort of their first 11 that could just add that experienced edge in games that might get them over the line and earn them a few more points. But really impressed, and they're definitely one to watch next season. You know, if Norwich are in the Championship, I think they're going to be up there with them.
Yeah, I felt there was a lot of similarities with when Russell Martin Swansea came to Carrow Road last year, and just completely, you know, Norwich were out-coached and out-fought, and I know they had a red card that day, but a little bit similar to that in terms of looking at them, and you, as I did think then, obviously, events did boy events, and Russell Martin gets taken, but you were looking at them at that point and thinking, oof, you know, a couple of additions there, and Russell Martin will have them in a good way, and it kind of feels like that with Liam Manning. I remember feeling similarly about Stoke under Alex Neil, though, and that's blown up, but they did make about 400 signings in that time, so it feels like they are close to achieving, you know, something that could push them next season. And it's interesting, he was asked post game about how much sort of at this stage of the season for a team playing for nothing can impact the start of next season. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see that. And obviously they took the lead at Carrow Road, and probably deservedly so. You look at the chances that they had in the game. Norwich hit the post early on. Josh Sargent, as he does, spinning, creating something out of nothing, got a little bit lucky with a pass that was slightly behind him from Borja Sainz. But then you look at it, I mean, Sykes was played through, and I mean, that's wow. I think me and you would have made a better effort than what he did, or why he decided to chip it. I think he even had the option to square it, and it would have been 1-0. Twine hits the bar, as you mentioned, with the free kick in the second half. Gunn has made an unbelievable save from Scott Twine. That was at 1-1. There was one from Naki Wells in added time as well. Harry Cornick has put one in the 90th minute, which, Liam, I haven't watched it back, I must confess. I don't know if you have, but he felt that was onside, so that'd be interesting to see that one back. And then obviously the one they did take was an excellent finish. But again, it goes back to that point I was making earlier, that ability, that bounce back ability for Norwich to respond so quickly. They threw John Rowe on the pitch, but the ability to get an equaliser so quickly probably prevented the frustration setting in on the pitch, in the stands. But in general, it felt like an important time to equalise. And probably then, I mean, the way that we've seen games at Carrow, you would have expected Norwich City to push on and win it, but that's not how it transpired.
No, I think, you know, that probably brings it all back to kind of that individual quality. You know, Gabriel Zara's ball through to find Josh Sargent. You know, obviously the awareness to see Borja Sainz. I know there's sort of debate about whether it's onside or not, but at the end of the day, you know, he was totally aware of where he was for the tap in. And you know, we mentioned it, you know, a little while ago there, kind of the Blackburn game and the way they folded. Norwich go 1-0 behind in games, and you don't really feel that sort of edge in the crowd. Maybe, you know, the frustration started to build. It almost feels like, come on, get back to the halfway line and go again, because I think they know that this squad is capable of pulling it out the bag and getting the, you know, the opportunities they require to either turn the game completely or at least, you know, get something out of it. And on a day where they weren't at their best, they've still managed to get something from the game, and that ultimately is a sign of a good team. You know, sides that aren't, you know, playing consistently well week in, week out, but they know even when those moments come and they don't perform to the levels that they're capable of as a squad and as a group to to get those points. So I think that probably lends itself back to the experience element in this side. You know, you look at the likes of Ashley Barnes, Shane Duffy, Danny Bart, even off the bench, those kind of players which were added, you know, and I think rightfully so, there's obviously been levels of criticism about that. But I think certainly from last season, where this young squad maybe towards the end of the season, you know, they went 1-0 behind, it felt like it was inevitable. That was game over. They were going to go and lose 2-3-0, as that Swansea game, you know, documented. And, you know, there's plenty of other, you know, sort of times in that, maybe the Blackpool last game of the season, Middlesbrough. They were just, it was just very tough watching. This feels like a group, you know, with those leaders that is able to, you know, get back sort of on the horse and go again. And, you know, that's probably credit to the recruitment, maybe, in terms of those players. Obviously, that's not sustainable for the long term, but I think certainly then when you look at these younger players they've got in the squad, they're going to, you know, learn a lot from that. And I think it you know, puts Norwich in good stead moving into playoff games, where, you know, it is going to be high pressure and there might be that edge. I think the fans, even if they went 1-0 behind in a semi-final, would probably back these boys to go and get themselves back in the game.
Yeah, I'm pleased with what you said earlier in terms of the reaction from it from the fans, and you're right. I mean, it's there's been results, and Sheffield Wednesday is probably the most recent example where Norwich have drawn a game or they've dropped points, and it's felt like the end of the world a little bit. And, you know, particularly after Sheffield Wednesday, I thought it was very harsh how much of it got directed towards David Wagner, because you know, we were both at the game. The opportunities that Norwich squandered, that should have been that game out of sight. And I'm sure that that Bristol City maybe feel the same today with the chances that they've been able to construct. Whereas actually, you know, that coupled with obviously an inability to set piece or defend set pieces on that night probably cost Norwich more than anything David Wagner did, substitutions or not. And again, I said this on my verdict at the time. I get that, because, you know, if you do that and you don't win, then you've given them a stick to beat you with. But I'm pleased that it's kind of, most people have been able to leave Carron and sort of go, oh, okay, it's not too bad. It's fine. It's not the end of the world. And, you know, that's probably impacted, like you say, slightly by other results. But two games left, Adam, I think if we assess sort of the general playoff picture, Norwich are in a hell of a position, aren't they? You look at the cushion they've got, six, but I mean, the pitch has basically not changed. They've gained a point on West Brom, who lost at Leicester at lunchtime. And obviously, like you said, is there slight disappointment they couldn't get fifth? Yes. Is it the end of the world? Not really. We know that they're going to play one of those four. They're going to play Southampton, Leeds, Leicester or Ipswich, probably not Leicester now in the playoffs. As it stands, it will be Leeds and everything that comes with a Daniel Farker reunion, but that will probably change about four times before we get to it. But looking below them, that's the significance. There's obviously games coming up this week. There is a scenario, obviously, if either side fails to win that game in midweek against Coventry and Hull, if that is a draw, essentially, is what I'm saying. Would have been the easy English way to say that. If that ends a draw, and Norwich City win next weekend, top six secured and done with a game to go. And like you say, they don't then have to navigate what could be a very, very difficult final day against Birmingham, who I think, you know, they've got Huddersfield next weekend. That's an absolutely monumental game for them. But they are going to need something on the final day, you think, to either get themselves out of it or to keep themselves out of it. But they're in control. They're in command. It feels, like you said, that Preston result felt massive. A point chipped away at it. Nearly there now.
Yeah, I mean, I've always felt 75 would get you in, and, you know, they're now on 72. That means one more win from two games. And, you know, as I sort of mapped that, I think they are two favourable games on paper. I know today maybe a lot of people would have felt it was a favourable game, but I felt Bristol City were the side that maybe could have been the thorn in this run-in that, you know, could have been a real threat to Norwich. And I thought, you know, as we've spoken about just previously there, they were that, and rightfully deserved what they got from today. But, yeah, I think, sort of moving forwards, you look at obviously the other fixtures, you don't want to be reliant on other results, but it's more like now looking at it thinking, let's hope there's a favourable result there. But it doesn't really matter, because if Norwich still do their own business, then they'll still achieve, you know, achieve the target they set out at the start of the season to get in the top six. And, you know, you sort of go back to those sort of dark days of sort of around pre-Christmas, and it didn't even seem possible that this side would be in this position where they are in full control. And, you know, their destiny is there. If they get the win, it's all but secured, and we can go into the playoffs excited, and given kind of the home form and the fortress feeling around the place. And we spoke about kind of the edge there of, you know, the fans maybe not turning, even if they get 1-0 behind. This side has got a real sort of, I suppose they feel quite stern in terms of, they are very capable now in terms of their mentality to go and turn games, and that's obviously great to see moving into some really big high pressure games that they've dealt with well over this run. So yeah, I think you say any Norwich fan offered them this position, certainly after Blackburn Sunderland games, I think they'd have probably have laughed and, you know, told you where to go. So that's encouraging. And yeah, let's hope Carrow's on good form again next Saturday, which I'm sure it will be. And hopefully we can get it over the line.
Yeah, and you know, there was a moment in David Wagner's post-match press conference when he sort of referenced the end of last season, and sort of I had 10 games go by in my head where I thought, blimey, you think about how grim that was. The fact they're in this position where, you know, we're having to work out permutations and all that stuff is more exciting and whatnot, even irrespective of how this season ends. It's good that they're in this position to talk about. What I'm now going to do is try and attempt some maths live on camera and on audio. So this could go poorly, but we speak about the position that we're in. I'm going to start with West Brom. Obviously, Norwich cannot finish fourth mathematically. They can get a maximum of 78 points now, as is the case with West Brom as well. Just in terms of goal difference, West Brom still have a superior one. That's why they're fifth. They've got a plus 23 goal difference. Norwich have a plus 16 goal difference, so a pretty healthy goal difference cushion that West Brom have there. And they've got Sheffield Wednesday and is it Preston? At home to finish. Norwich, as I said, can finish on 78. They, of course, have Swansea and Birmingham. Hull obviously have three games left. They've got that game in hand, so they can get 9 more points, which means they can get now a maximum of 75. They're on 66. That's correct, isn't it? Yep. Coventry, again, they've got two games in hand on Norwich, but four games left? Yes, four games left, so they can get 12 more points, so 75. And Middlesbrough, who you have to say today are pretty much out of it, but if they win all of their games and everyone else ahead of them loses all their games, unlikely, I know, they can get 72 points. But as I said, they've got to play Leeds on Monday night as well, and worth saying they have they're 11 goals worse off than Norwich, so you have to say that is probably them done now. So we are looking probably at four teams into two, which means, Adam, like you say, if Norwich City beat Swansea next weekend, this is the reality, irrespective really of that midweek game and team winning that. If they beat Swansea next weekend, 75 points with the goal difference they have, they're 8 goals better off than Hull. They're only 2 points better off than Cov. So if Cov were to win, there's still maybe a possibility that they could do that on goal difference, obviously depending on the final day. But that would probably be unlikely, you would suggest. It's a hell of a position that they're in now, isn't it? Because, as you said, one win, yeah, and they are all but there, really. It would require a point on the final day at Birmingham.
Yeah, you sort of look at like the sort of pressure cauldron, I suppose, of the Championship and the results it throws up. At this stage of the season, it's really hard to mount runs where you are winning game after game after game after game, kind of the consecutive nature of winning results. It feels, you know, you look at like last weekend, you know, and Coventry losing 3-0 at Birmingham. Who would have predicted that prior to kick-off? And I think they've both got a few tricky fixtures. They've both got a play, of course, Norwich's bitter rival, Ipswich Town, who will be gearing, you know, hopefully for their perspective, a top two place. You know, I'm sure Norwich fans will have their own opinion on where they want them to finish. I'm probably of the persuasion maybe that I'd rather not have to face them in the playoffs, but you know, we'll see. I think, you know, the record element is still in Norwich's favour at the moment. Maybe less.
Do Norwich a favour as well. They've got Hull and Cov in that run.
Yeah, so I think, you know, you look at that and the pressure that will be on Kieran McKenna's men, they're going to want to try and probably get results in those games. You know, it feels unlikely that Ipswich would lose both of those. And obviously we mentioned, you know, Hull and Coventry have got to play each other. I think they've both still got a couple of sides to face that are in sort of that relegation bracket as well. So I think it just feels quite tough that they all, you know, both win all their games. In reality, even if they both win all their games, if Norwich win one game, they still will be level on points with Norwich, and the goal difference obviously would come into play. But Norwich is significantly better than Hull's, and you know, Coventry, I know it's a lot more close, but you know, I think if it boiled down to it, I still feel Norwich would have enough in the tank. But yeah, I still feel I'll get 4 points from the next two games, and that would all absolutely mathematically impossible then that either of those sides could catch Norwich. And yeah, as we said, you know, it's all about being in control. They are the team in control, and they don't feel like a side that's, you know, folded under this pressure. You look at kind of Hull, they folded a bit under that sort of, I suppose, expectation maybe when they looked at the signings they brought in January, Carvalho, and you know, they've still got the likes of Philogene there. I know they've had Delap out injured for sustained spells this season, but real, real quality players. Coventry, there was lots of expectation, I suppose, after last season and what unfolded, whether the FA Cup's become more of a distraction for them. I know we had that sort of conversation when we done the podcast, kind of looking at the run-ins, and I think we were all maybe dismissive of that being a distraction. It could have been a boost for them, but I still feel it's probably had an effect. You know, it's very difficult to when you've got a Wembley semi-final date with Manchester United, you know, that is going to be at the forefront of your mind somewhere. And that can be damaging to players, I suppose, when they're still kind of got this element of the playoffs under their sort of belt as well. And obviously the games in hand, you know, it's something that managers speak about. It's sort of a cliche that you'd rather have the points than the games in hand. And I think that's probably actually helped Norwich that the Coventry have had these games in hand. Hull have had these games in hand to play. And psychologically, it puts Norwich in the driving seat. And I think they've almost been the side that therefore have been able to gain that consistency. They know what the objective and what their target is and how they're going to reach it. And at the moment, they're obviously navigating a route that's going to see them end in the destination they want to be.
Yeah, and like you say, the position that Norwich are in, they've got to basically, as you said, get to what, 76 as it stands. That's what they'll need at an absolute maximum. So they probably won't even need that, to be honest. And the reality is they are so close now to securing that. I mean, we spoke about fifth earlier. I think that's worth a little bit more of an in-depth conversation. I mean, does it matter that much to you? I think statistically, you've probably got a higher percentage of gaining promotion from the playoffs if you finish fifth. And look, if you want an omen, that's where David Wagner finished with Huddersfield when he took them up in, what, 16-17. And they had 81 points, I think. So Norwich are going to be a little bit shy of his Huddersfield team. But yeah, does it matter for you? Because again, we've spoken about this a lot today, but we know that if Norwich finish in the top six, they're going to have to play at home first. We know they're going to have to play one of those four teams. Does the dynamic change that much? Does it give you any kind of psychological boost finishing fifth as opposed to finishing sixth?
I think in some scenes it probably would, you know, if you have sort of, you go back maybe to previous times and even that, you know, playoff season that Norwich went up, Norwich were significantly the best side maybe of that in the playoff race in third place. I think if you probably asked Ipswich Town fans, the players involved at that point, the management, they probably didn't fancy playing Norwich because they were by far on paper the best side in that playoff race. And I know Middlesbrough were sort of close and, you know, they had a very good season and obviously Norwich done the job in the final. But it feels like this time round, I think you have got four sides that probably on any other given season would all be in the top two. So mentally to miss out, particularly if it goes to the final day, I think, you know, if you're Daniel Farke, you're Kieran McKenna, you're Enzo Maresca, you're Russell Martin, and you've missed out on automatic promotion, trying to then switch back into playoff mode, I feel this season could be a little bit more difficult than previous times. And I think they're all very good quality sides on paper, hence why their points tally show what they are. And I actually feel in some senses now, given that Southampton's result today, they probably look more likely to finish fourth. And I think you look at kind of the, you know, we speak about momentum and coming into playoffs. I know they fell short today, but their actual run up till now, just recently, has been vastly improved. They've, from what I've seen on the TV, been probably the side I've been most impressed with. I felt Leeds have faltered a little bit. Ipswich, you know, Norwich have obviously, you know, played them very recently and done a good job on them at home and deservedly won that game and have obviously nullified all their threats. You know, Leicester now, for me, feel probably the side that is edging very close to automatic, so it feels a little bit less likely that they'll play them. And you know, I know Leeds have demonstrated their quality against Norwich both times this season, but I just feel, you know, you look at Wagner, he's dealt with the playoffs before with Huddersfield. He's sort of had a formula there that's got them up. Whether people want to watch that formula in, obviously no goals, you know, it wasn't exactly the prettiest way to go up, but I think, you know, if it means Premier League football and all the finances that come with that, I know we can have the debate about whether, you know, you want to see Norwich in the Premier League and kind of the competitive nature of that further down the track. But about navigating a playoff route, I don't feel it matters. I think, you know, Norwich at home, you know, they haven't lost there since November. If they don't lose to Swansea, then that record will stay intact going into the playoffs. And Psychologically, you know, for these players, that's huge, particularly given it's the first game as well. I think if they can get themselves in a position of control heading to an opposition venue for the second leg, you know, providing they get round the game in the correct fashion, then they will obviously be in the final. So I don't think it matters. I think all those four sides in the top four have been good on paper this season. We'll all give Norwich a, you know, difficult test, whichever one it is, and, you know, let's hope for Norwich's sake that they can compete, you know, whoever they get in the semi-final.
Yeah, it's going to be narratives galore if they do, because it's going to be Russell Martin, it's going to be Daniel Farke, it's going to be Ipswich Town and everything that comes with that. Or Leicester. There's not really many narratives around, but it's going to be really interesting. I mean, I'll bring out the statistic. I mean, finishing sixth place, the last team to get promoted, to finish sixth and gain promotion to the Premier League was Ian Holloway's Blackpool in, when was that, 2010, 11? Yeah. So that's a long time, even though that, you know, we kind of, and I think there's a lot of urban myths around the playoffs, but it feels like a little bit of an urban myth that, you know, these teams that creep in with the momentum go on and win it. Actually, the statistics tell you that that isn't the case at all. Often the best team in the playoffs wins them, as Norwich documented the year that they went up. They finished third, didn't they, in that year. And there's a lot of talk about whether, you know, missing out on automatic promotion would affect them negatively. It didn't. Equally, and this surprised me a little bit, and, you know, we'll finish this first half with this, but I was looking pre-game at sort of David Wagner's Huddersfield and what they did. And actually, you consider how Norwich have done it over the last few months, where they've been so relentless and they've picked up points and they've chipped away at it and they've surged up the table in a fashion that nobody foresaw coming. His Huddersfield team won one of their last five games and still won the playoffs. So I don't know. There's a lot of urban myths around it. Is the reality that we just don't know. We just don't know how it's going to go. And obviously it will depend. But, you know, and you mapped it out a minute ago. Norwich have only won one game against the current top four. So they've got to win over two legs. It's going to be difficult whoever they play. But it's interesting, I guess, the dynamics of how Wagner did it with Huddersfield and how his side went into the playoffs out of form, having won one in five. I can't remember the discourse around that time, but I'm sure that was a conversation that they were having compared to how his Norwich side go in. Does it mean anything at all?
Yeah, I suppose obviously with that season, it was Huddersfield had such a blistering first half of the campaign. They probably could take the foot off the gas a little bit, and, you know, it obviously lent themselves to finishing fifth this season. Obviously, Norwich had to leave themselves a massive lot of, you know, they had to do the work to be able to even get themselves into this position. And whether it means a lot, if you look at the form table, obviously, you know, since kind of the Christmas period, Norwich are in and around the top two. I think Leeds have just taken more points than them. I don't know if that's changed after today, but
2024, I think they're top, aren't they?
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, that probably is a good indicator. Obviously, you know, the away form element. I know, you know, we've kind of spoken a lot about that at different points this season, but even that in 2024, you know, they have won at Hull, they've won at Stoke, they won at Preston in a great fashion last weekend. That probably feels like the kind of formula you would require going to a second leg of a semi-final against, you know, let's face it, probably on paper a better side. It will boil down to, obviously, you know, the tactics and getting it spot on the day. But I think, you know, Norwich have now, you know, shown over a sustained period of time that they can adapt, and they've got different ways of winning games. They've got individual quality for those moments that could define those big games. Johnny Rowe, of course, being back, which I'm sure we're going to talk a bit more about again on the Carrow pitch today. Maybe not, you know, not sort of having the impact he'd want, but I think that probably was more lent itself to the game today. And we obviously spoke about that and sort of the qualities of Bristol City that, you know, maybe nullified those Norwich threats. So, I think, you know, it's one of them. Form does kind of go out the window, I feel, in big games anyway, as we've kind of seen maybe when Norwich went to Portman Road. You know, if that was a foregone conclusion that Ipswich were going to win that game on that day. And I know, you know, probably lent itself to a little bit of luck at different points, but Norwich did go there and get a result, and I think that's ultimately what the playoffs is. Tends to be the best teams win, but, you know, let's face it, as Norwich showed today, you can have an off day, and if Norwich are at their best, then they can beat anyone.
Good stuff. We're going for a half-time dressing down, and then hopefully we'll come out in the second half with a much improved performance. See you in a second. You're listening to the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you with Coleman's of Norwich. We thank them very much for their support and their love and their mustard, of course, particularly as we wind up to the summer season. Bit of Coleman's mustard on a hot dog, you cannot beat it. Which probably brings us, Adam, to the Bring the Heat segment. Now, this might be the first time I think we're going to agree on one, because it's slim pickings today. Let's be frank. Who brought the heat for you this afternoon?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Angus Gunn. I think he probably was the reason Norwich picked up a point today when you boil it down and you look at those chances we spoke about. And I mean, David Wagner's calling the best goalkeeper in the Championship, and I'd agree. I think we've sort of echoed that sentiment throughout the whole of this season. Yeah. You know, him in big games, in big moments where Norwich have required him to stand strong and sort of pull out the big saves, he's delivered on pretty much every occasion. I can't really think of many times this season where he's even cost Norwich points due to sort of errors or anything of that nature, which maybe had been a criticism of previous goalkeepers. You know, I think Tim Krul's an absolute legend and done some amazing stuff, but there was moments in times where Norwich were in big games under pressure where maybe he did, you know, sort of concede an error that led to a goal. So, yeah, obviously we'll get into the debate about whether Norwich can keep him next season, and I suppose that will depend a lot on where Norwich are in terms of which division, and if they can persuade him to sign a new contract, of course, and because he's heading off to the Euros of Scotland, and you know, if he performs well there, you know, there's going to be interest. But yeah, for the moment, you know, let's enjoy him. He's a top class goalkeeper like his dad was. Not that we had the pleasure of watching him, but you know, you only got to go back and go through the clips and you know that. So yeah, he was excellent today, and you know, he deserves a big pat on the back from all the rest of his teammates, because he was crucial today in earning the point.
Yeah, I hope he's not got a pair of drink in the players bar post game. That's probably not a thing now with sports science and all of those, and hasn't been probably for about a decade. Yeah, I thought he was excellent. I mean, the save from Twine, you know, I think everyone inside Carrow Road and probably on the pitch and probably Scott Twine felt that was going to be a goal, and 2-1 to Bristol City to get himself up and in position quickly to push it around the post. I thought it was quite a poor finish, really, actually, in truth, but he still had a save to make, and he made it, and it was exceptionally good when most keepers would have struggled. And I think that's a really good point, actually. You think about how many points he's probably lost Norwich compared to how much he's won them. He's probably won Norwich an incredible amount of points. I go back to that Coventry game and the save from Casey Palmer, and you know, we could list countless others this season. In fact, you look at maybe the results without him compared to with him. He's been exceptional, and you know, he's not going to win player of the season, I don't think, but he should be someone who is up there. Absolutely. I think if I was Ben Napper, getting him on a new contract and, you know, can you build your team around a goalkeeper? I don't know. But definitely building the team outward from him, I think he's one that you would want to absolutely nail down in terms of long term and that security that he gives Norwich, the affiliation he has with the club. He's exceptionally good. And equally, I don't think anyone could blame him if he felt that he was ready for a challenge in the Premier League if Norwich were not to get there. So, yeah, I agree with that. I would throw in an honourable bring the heat mention for Jack Stacey, who I thought has, you know, been consistently very good for a while, but I thought he was Norwich's other top performer today, just in terms of his recovery running, his running forwards, his energy, the athleticism that he has. He causes teams real problems, he stretches them really well. Another really good performance from him this afternoon as well. You mentioned it earlier on, but John Rowe came back. It was good to see Jakob Sorensen back, Christian Fashnak back as well after the birth of his baby. It was daughter, wasn't it? Yeah good, because I've been writing daughter all day, so if that was wrong, I'd be quite embarrassed. Good to see some more options back for Norwich City. I think David Wagner has spoken pretty persistently and pretty openly about it in recent weeks, about the shortage that maybe he's had on the bench. And you know, I obviously there's been a lot of debate around Rowe specifically and about how you get him in the side. We've not seen that Science Sergeant Rowe sort of trio much this season. You know, we probably didn't see it to the full extent that we'd want to today. But there were little signs, little moments, sort of interchanges and whatnot that were quite exciting. It just brings the competition level up, doesn't it? Particularly, you know, not that there should be or that there necessarily would be with this group, but if there's any complacency, if you're Borja Science and you've got Jonathan Rowe on the bench, you know that you're going to have to turn up now. And that's a really useful trait to have this day. So as much as we're talking about Norwich kind of timing their run in terms of momentum and getting into the top six, actually having players back as well, they've timed that run really well.
Yeah, I think you could probably as well see maybe the fatigue setting in a little bit in sort of the game at Hillsborough, where they've sort of, for the last 15 minutes, it felt like, you know, they were sort of under the cosh and you didn't really have the players to come off the bench to maybe impact that and sort of take the strain away. Is crucial as well. You know, you sort of look at last weekend and Johnny Rowe's impact in that. You know, I know he didn't have direct involvement in the goal, but he was crucial in terms of just, you know, tiring defenders. He was running at them. You know, we know the quality that he's got, and maybe we didn't see that to the full extent today, but I think that obviously, as we've said a lot, is to do with the qualities that Bristol City showed. But he obviously did have a very good moment in the second half, pulled out a really good save out of O'Leary, and I think the more general feeling around the place as well. You saw him, you know, warming up there on the touchline sort of first half when he came out to do his warm-ups, and
big smile on his face.
Big smile. Yeah. He was sort of jeering up the Barkley and the Snake Pit that were, of course, singing and serenading him. And I think, yeah, that feeling that you've got more options off the bench, I'm sure for David Wagner, is a good thing. You know, we've obviously had the wider debate around whether, you know, the younger players on the bench, could they have been given more opportunities? But, you know, I think given that Norwich couldn't really afford to slip up and the consistency of needing results at this stage of the season, it's difficult. I think if you're a side a bit like Bristol City that, you know, haven't really necessarily got anything to play for, you're looking more for the future, maybe you've got more opportunity to utilise that. I suppose Norwich sort of saw that a little bit last season when he threw in Abu Kamara at different points and those kind of players that, you know, we haven't really seen in this run. I know Abou got a few moments in sort of the big winner against Rotherham, yeah. And then obviously Finlay Welsh, they were 3-1 down at Borough, down to 10 men, probably game over. So, yeah, I think it probably helps the players on the pitch that, you know, aren't then going to be pushed for the full 90 minutes. But you've also then got the sort of similar quality players you can bring off the bench. And we've seen the impact of those players. Fashnak scored them some really sort of vital goals at different points off the bench this season. You know, look at Hull away, where you sort of put the ball in the net for 2-0, and obviously, you know, Hull then went and pulled one back. So that was effectively the goal that sealed the win there. A couple of home games against Watford and Cardiff, he was pretty instrumental in scoring. I know those games were more sort of comfortable victories, maybe less so Watford, but you know, sort of just that impact off the bench. Maybe didn't have it today, but yeah, Jakob Sorensen, I think we've seen, you know, in recent times, there's been kind of a clamour maybe for him to consider signing a new contract. I think the injury element, you know, is kind of his fitness more generally is up for debate and whether that's worthwhile. But certainly in kind of that run where they won at Stoke and they won against Rotherham, he was, you know, a crucial part of that and played well. So yeah, I think for David Wagner, that's good to have, especially going into these sort of last couple of games, and you can maybe just get that little bit more, you know, extra fitness into their legs. And they've got a few clean weeks now in terms of training that will help them, of course, in sort of their full recovery, I suppose, and getting back to full match sharpness. And I think that bodes well if David Wagner's got plenty of options going into the playoff games, particularly the key players. Obviously, that is crucial in these last two games. They cannot afford an injury to Gabriel Zara, Josh Sargent, Boaz Sainz. You go through the whole 11, really, any of them.
Angus Gunn.
Yeah. So I think that's obviously crucial. And hopefully, of course, they get to the final day and maybe they have already done it and David Wagner can consider not fully, maybe fully resting these players. You know, obviously you don't want them to sort of have a couple of week break before a semi-final, but certainly, you know, you don't want to be going to Birmingham and
take them off after an hour. Yeah.
Yeah, don't want to expect full 90 from Josh Sargent, given, you know, we know he's still nursing this issue that's sort of persistently, you know, there, and it's got, you know, drastically improved, I suppose, in recent times, but it's still, as we saw, you know, David Wagner alluded to it actually prior to going to Preston, it's still something they're having to manage. So yeah, that's good to see, and I think David Wagner will be certainly very happy in the fitness department as well that they've got these options back.
No Sydney Van Hooijdonk again today. I think we've seen him play about 2 minutes in the last five games. You know, and I know we touched upon this, I think, post Preston, when we spoke a little bit about his Sheffield Wednesday comments. David Wagner, not Sydney Van Hooijdonk, who hasn't done the, I don't think. It's intriguing, isn't it? I think it feels increasingly like that's not a player that David Wagner feels is able to suit games or affect games in the way that he would like. I feel really sorry for him, just in terms of a case study coming over here, you know, view to buy, essentially, a deal. It's very difficult because he's got Josh Sargent and Ashley Barnes ahead of him anyway. But there have been moments, I think, to get him on the pitch that maybe haven't been taken. And then equally, there's probably the wider point, which is probably a conversation for another day, really, in terms of that being a player that Ben Knapper signed and pushed forward and one that David Wagner's not really used. It's not great, is it, when you've got kind of that situation, you've got a player there that essentially is kicking his heels at the moment, really.
Yeah, particularly sort of, you know, I know when he signed, there was sort of a lot of excitement, I suppose, you know, and a lot of hype. You looked at kind of the goal record that he had in Holland. It spoke for itself. Very much a fox in the box kind of striker, you know, a man who knows where the back of the net is. We know, obviously, you know, sort of he hadn't played a lot of minutes this season when he was out in Italy, and it was about trying to build that fitness, and that's kind of what I probably saw maybe for the first couple of weeks. But then I think it started to become maybe slightly more evident in games where he wasn't really coming off the bench, and maybe Josh Sargent was starting to look a little bit tired. And we know, obviously, that, you know, I spoke about the managing of the injury, and you think, you know, this is a moment maybe in a game where you're winning quite comfortably, get him off, you know, get Hooijdonk on, give him an opportunity, and he hasn't really had that. And I know one of the press conferences there a couple of weeks back, and Wagner was speaking about him, saying, no, he's done very well in training, I've been impressed, and when he gets his opportunity, it's about taking it. But he hasn't had an opportunity. So the reality is, if you're Ben Knapper and you're looking at him as a player, and you know, you've brought him in and you want to assess whether he's someone you want to commit to for a longer term deal.
Not seen enough, have we?
We've not seen a you know, an actual sample and sort of a real bulk of evidence to suggest you should, you know, go either way. And it could be an opportunity missed if he goes, you know, to another side in the summer and kicks on. You look at it as one thinking, oh, okay, you know, we could have had that. Or alternatively, you know, maybe David Wagner's judgment's correct and that he isn't, you know, a player that's up to the standards that Norwich require for the Championship and certainly for sort of the top six end of where they are at the moment. So we've got to trust David Wagner and his judgment, but I certainly feel a little bit sorry for him. And I sort of had the pleasure of meeting him a few weeks back when I went down to the fan hub and sort of behind the camera for an interview we had on our channels. And anyone that watched that would have sort of heard him speak quite openly about sort of the plan that was there for him to try and build up his match fitness, and he would be, you know, more involved sort of heading into these final games of the season, and that hasn't happened. And I know it's football, but he's had to move, you know, his life across to England from Italy, and, you know, that I can imagine for, you know, adaptation. I know he's not, you know, he is a player of, you know, he's Dutch and it's not a million miles away from here, but there's still, you know, an involvement of having to a different culture, a different climate, you know, everything that comes with that. And I think then to sort of come here and not get the moment or the minutes that he probably would have expected when he signed is probably disappointing. I'm sure him and sort of his agents and those involved in, you know, him as a player will probably be a little bit disappointed, and they'll reflect on this as, you know, a real sort of maybe not the right loan move for him and for his career. But yeah, of course, hopefully for him, he can go and kick on somewhere else. But it increasingly feels to me like a player that won't be here next season, certainly not signing on a permanent. And, you know, I think probably looking at it as well, you look at kind of Adam Eder and the impact he was having at the sort of first half of the season. He was actually a player who was visibly coming off the bench in games and making an impact. You know, Bristol City is a prime example. You know, that was a game where maybe Norwich didn't even hit the levels, but they got the one opportunity and Adam Eder was there and he buried it. And ultimately, Højdonk didn't have the same opportunity today because he wasn't on the pitch. So, yeah, I'm sure fans have got different views on it, but I'd also say when I've seen him play this, you know, this kind of since he's arrived, I know he's not played a lot of minutes, probably about 115 minutes, I think, probably at this point.
Was his signing longer? For fans, yeah.
Yeah, it probably, I think it actually was about 2 hours. So, that probably feels probably this most, you know, the sort of biggest impact I suppose he's had. But I think I've not seen much from him. I think, you know, there's clearly a player there, but whether it's just about the fitness element and not being there, and therefore we've not seen the best from him. But for this system at this current time under David Wagner, probably not the right player at the right club.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel like he suits what Wagner wants in terms of energy and physicality. And from what we've seen, very limited, but it doesn't quite see that he's able to offer the same that maybe some of those other players have. Worth adding as well at this point, in terms of other news, Steve Weaver obviously is set to depart the club at the end of the season. This is something that he's been mulling over for a while, as I understand it. I think Norwich will take their time, obviously, over any sort of replacement, as they can do. They've got bigger fish to fry, quite frankly, at the moment with promotion and whatnot. But I've written a piece on it. We spoke a little bit about it in the preview show, so you can have a more in-depth conversation there. But clearly a very important position. I'd like to see Norwich go external with it, just because there's nothing wrong necessarily with pushing someone up internally, but I think it would just be good in terms of Ben Napper's position to almost stamp his authority and what he wants to do, to get someone aligned with what he wants to do, which he said is to push young players through. I think that is a position of real significance, as is head coach, as is head of recruitment. I think those three really you look at has been really significant for a sporting director, particularly when they're dropped into a club and trying to stamp their authority and get their blueprint into motion, I guess. Those are the positions that you kind of need to do that, really. So that's one to watch as the summer progresses and to see where Norwich City end up. But clearly an aspiration to get someone in that role before the start of next season. And of course, Steve Weaver and what he's done. I think 24 debuts in 7 years. Can't argue with that. There's plenty of stuff that you can argue with within the record as well. But we'll save that maybe for another day. We're going to end the pod in a moment by doing our top three for player of the season, because by the time that we record next, that top three will have been done. I just wanted to have a quick discussion, Adam, and you mentioned it earlier. I can't remember where I saw this. It might have been the scrimmage, BBC Radio Norfolk, where I saw Chris Reeve speaking about it, about you know, people who say, and I've had it a lot, people have come up and said to me, or they've messaged me, or I've got family who said, oh, I don't want Norwich to go up anyway. And you know, I can... So I think there's two parts to this debate. So I think there is the competitive part, I'll say, in which case, you know, I think that's a little bit of a non-argument, because, you know, and we're all football fans. I think you want to see your team competing against the very best that there is, even if that doesn't end very well, because you might get a Man City at home. You might get a moment that, you know, defies all logic. And, you know, it's a moment that I will talk about that Man City result forever. It's the first game I did in this job, so that helps. But in terms of the magnitude of it, the feeling of it, the David versus Goliath nature of it, incredible, absolutely incredible. So from a competitive element, I don't think it's a debate. You and any football fan, whether they support King's Lynn, whether they support anyone in the National League, their aspirations will be to get to the Premier League, of course, because that's where everyone wants to be and everyone wants to compete. So I'm less keen to approach it from that angle, because I think that's a little... If you polled 100 football fans, would you rather play against the best teams? They'd say yes. So I don't think that's a debate. But I think what is a debate, and this obviously is something that has been, I think, brought to the forefront this week because of everything that's happened around FA Cup replays and the nature of how that deal has been done, supposedly, according to the EFL, without consultation of that body and those clubs and even some of the people that sat on the boards that matter. And that could have been so Weber, I think, if certain voting would have gone slightly differently. But I think there is a debate about whether you want to be part of the Premier League as an organisation, as is currently, when you've got, you've got a team who are probably going to win their fourth consecutive title with 115 charges against them, when you've got teams towards the bottom of the table who are having points deductions because they are not complying with financial rules that probably prevent them from going and spending money and having that aspiration to try and claw down some of the top clubs in the league. So even that is probably an order, so to speak. You've got the teams who did go up last season, probably all of those looking likely at the moment. I know, I think Burnley, what did they win today in the end? Looking likely to come down again. And obviously, that's not to say the EFL is perfect. There's challenges within that. They haven't dealt with ownership issues well enough. There's clearly a parachute payment that a lot of people debate, that a lot of people want to have. And the fact that you look at even at this season, the disparity between three of those teams, obviously Ipswich thrown in there as well, which makes that, I think, an incredible achievement, even from a Norwich perspective, the fact that they've been able to keep pace with those sides. So I'm keen to approach it in that kind of light, because for me, I think we all like to think that, particularly with Norwich and the type of club that they are, that if they got to the Premier League, it would be different. They'd swim against the tide. They'd do it differently. And it's easy to say that when you're out of it. You know, I understand why they haven't. And you know, I understand there is an argument about FA Cup replays. But it would have been nice if Norwich would have been one of those clubs that issued a statement kind of bemoaning the fact that's happened. And even the morals around it in terms of the backroom deal that was done. So for me, I feel, and it's been, you know, I think about it constantly, really, which probably shows I've got no life. But obviously, it's a situation this week which has probably become a little bit more prevalent because of what's happened elsewhere. You know, and I feel really worried about the state of football at the moment and the general direction of travel that it's going in. And I go back to a Gareth Southgate quote when he was appointed as England manager. I think he said something along the lines of, I love the game, but I hate the sport and the business and what it is. And I increasingly feel the same when you look at the way the game is heading, where people are owned by some very questionable people and some very questionable organisations at the top level. I worry about that. I worry about what that means for Norwich. I worry about what that means for football more general, because that aspiration just doesn't feel there. So I'm keen to sort of distill, and I'd love to get people's thoughts on this as well, because again, I'm trying to separate it, because I think a lot of people make this about the competition, and I don't think there's a competitive debate to be had, but I think there is a debate about the other stuff. How do you feel about the Premier League and football in its current state, and maybe even the FA Cup replays as well?
Yeah, I think the gap... that's probably been demonstrated more than ever this season. You look at kind of the Sheffield United struggles, the Burnley's struggles. I know they're sort of, their man Luton have maybe got a very slim chance due to the fact that, you know, Nottingham Forest and Everton have both been deducted points, but it's just become a massive money ball really at the top. And I think, you know, you look at Norwich's situation, and could they go and compete with these sides, you know, in terms of financials? Definitely not, you know. And then it is about trying to be smart. And I think that's probably where the Brentfords and the Brightons of the world come into it. They have had to do things differently, but they've done it successfully. And that's ultimately put them in positions where they are now competitive in the top flight. And that's been in more recent times, because I feel, I had this conversation actually with a friend of mine this week. You go back maybe like a decade ago when this Norwich team went up under Paul Lambert. On paper, that side should never stay in the Premier League. But the unity and the fact they could go into League One and pick out the Elliot Bennetts, the Pilkingtons of the world, and step them straight into the Premier League. And, you know, they defied all odds to stay there for three seasons. And I just don't see that as quite as plausible now. Maybe you look at kind of, you know, Luton, I feel, have done it in a clever way. They brought in lots of experienced players, you know, Ross Barkley. They've also brought in a lot of top-end championship players that maybe if they drop back down, they're in a good position to try and go again. But for Norwich, it probably is just the financial gain of being in the top flight that becomes the driver maybe of being there, less so for the enjoyment of the fans. Because I think, you know, you sort of look at the moments this season and the Ipswich game and late winners at various places, the joy that brings and for the mood, I think, is significantly better than going to you know, times maybe in previous Premier League seasons where you've gone to Crystal Palace and lost 3-0. You know, that on the pitch, even those sides in the middle bracket of the Premier League are, you know, a long way away from Norwich now. And, you know, I think, yeah, competitive-wise, you know, any team, ultimately, you know, we see it in the FA Cup, there's always shocks. I think on a one-game, you know, Norwich done it against Man City, in a one-game scenario, they could probably go and conquer. But over a wider season, I think it becomes far more difficult to do that. And, you know, that's obviously up to fans to whether they want to see the best players in the world. I personally would love to, you know, go down to Carrow Road today and watch Kevin De Bruyne, Erling Haaland. You know, I think
that's the point. I think most people would. Yeah. I don't think that's sort of the debate. I think it's more like, you know, if you got, it's everything that comes with being in the Premier League. You know, you get, everything gets VAR'd to death. You know, games are being decided electronically. They're not in the EFL. And okay, that means sometimes you have to accept the type of decision that Rotherham had to give away against West Brom, which was absolutely ludicrous. But or even Bristol City Huddersfield, the one that they had, you know, that may well end up costing Huddersfield greatly in their battle for survival, you know, where every game is sort of broadcast and you don't know what day of the week you're gonna, you can kick off on a Thursday night, say, but very rarely Saturday 3 o'clock, you're kind of kicking off all over the place. So even sort of fan welfare in that extent, it feels more like a sort of reality show than it does a football calendar. And who knows, maybe the new EFL deal with Sky will create that as well, because it's going to create more broadcast slots as well. So that's kind of more my point. It's everything that's associated with the Premier League, and that I find very difficult to feel excited about. The competition and facing Kevin De Bruyne and testing yourself against Erling Haaland, absolutely, bring it on. But the rest of it, I just, that feels really unpalatable to me compared to maybe the alternative, which I have to say again, isn't, we're talking about sort of rolling things in glitter here, but that feel, I feel a lot more excited about a 46-game championship season than I do about a Premier League campaign. But that's just me. Some people may feel different.
Yeah, I think the Premier League is, you know, such a saturated place to be in terms of, you look at, like, you boil it down to the fans, you know, with respect, you go to somewhere like Old Trafford, it's not a big atmosphere, and it's, you know, there obviously is the element of, you get these big, you know, big names, there is going to be an element of tourist fans that will go there just for the one game to watch said player, where, you know, let's face it, if you're rocking up to Luton, everyone there is fully behind Luton. They're Luton fans through and through. They'd have been through the tough times of the National League. They've then seen their club rise to the Premier League, and I think, you know, they have a different outlook maybe on football and sort of what they want to see their team. They want to see their team compete, obviously, and that's what we've mentioned. But I think probably the general feeling around the Premier League, and it probably does need sort of these decisions that, you know, to almost go in their favour. You look at kind of the points deduction, I suppose, of like Nottingham Forest.
That's kept it alive, basically. Yeah. And that's sort of my point, the way it's going. It feels to me like it's like, you get up there, it's like a kid in a playground. When, you know, you're playing in a playground with a load of bigger kids who, you know, have got more authority and probably are more popular than you. And they let you go down the slide once, and then by the time you get to the bottom, they're kicking you and throwing sand over you and whatnot. I don't know. It'd be interesting to get other people's thoughts on that. But I don't think it's a, you know, if you don't want to go to the Premier League, it's like this sort of massive crime and you hate competition and all of that element. I don't think it's about competition. I think it's about the Premier League more generally and the state of the game more generally. And, you know, we could host about four different podcasts on that. So we'll probably cut that here. But I'd love to hear people's thoughts, whether you're watching on YouTube, comment below about kind of what you feel about Premier League promotion in a wider context, not just in terms of, you know, would you like to play Man City? Because obviously everybody would. But how you feel sort of about Norwich City's place in that particular ecosystem and all of those different elements as well. And there's probably some morals involved in that as well, and how you feel on that front. Let's end the pod then with player of the season, because we're at that time of year. I think voting is closed now. Westie won fan of the season, of course. Yeah, he did. I mean, he's off to Gran Canaria. You know, I think we're gonna have to go for his agent now if we want him, aren't we? I mean, he's that popular now, isn't he?
Yeah, I was gonna say, if you have any spare room in your luggage, Westie, and you want to put me in it, then I'll happily oblige. But yeah, no, you know, he's a deserving winner. Obviously, what he had to receive online, you know, wrong on all levels, and it shouldn't be the case. You know, we're all football fans, you know, we all have different views, and we should just accept everyone for their views and sort of the points that were picked out against him, just, you know, on a sort of level completely wrong. And I'm glad to see kind of obviously the response that got, and, you know, it's picked up, and credit to those that were in positions to pick out, you know, his fundraiser and put it to a wider audience, and obviously the greater good of football won on that occasion. And he's certainly been a massive winner from it as well, you know, and rightfully so. You know, to to be, I think he was like a community hero. Yeah, he's been at Wembley as a VIP guest. Yeah, obviously one fan of the season now. And you know, what underpins all of it is he's raised £60,000 for a really, you know, important charity. I'm sure plenty of people watching. I know I personally have also been, you know, I've had cancer involved in family and friends and stuff. And, you know, it's, you know, we all know how horrible it is and, you know, the impact it has on individuals, you know, whether it's them that's you know, got it or their families, you know, more, you know, importantly as well. So, yeah, massive credit to him. He deserves it. And, yeah, hopefully he enjoys his trip to Gran Canaria. As David Wagner said, take the sun cream because I'm sure it's going to be warm.
Yeah, do you know my favourite bit about what is a wonderful video on the club channels is when Wagner walks in and Westy says to him, "You're doing a good job now." I like that. It's just a line. It was very funny. But yeah, pleased for him. What a guy. And you know, what I would say to him is, you know, don't forget your humble roots here at the Pink and Westy. And we'd still absolutely love to get you on various fan interviews that Sam does pre-game. Just finally then, Adam, let's do that top three of player of the season. We're probably going to do less debate around three and two. So I don't know if you've got your three in your heads, but what we'll do is you go three, I'll go three, you go two, I'll go two, and then we'll have a little bit of a chat about who we think is going to win it. So do a drum roll. I'm doing a drum roll action for people listening. Who for you finishes third in the player of the season conversation?
I think we mentioned him already on the show a few times, Angus Gunn. The points he saved Norwich at different points of the season, he's earned them way more than he's cost them. And yeah, on another season, and maybe even last season, he would have won it. You know, an absolute canter this season. Unfortunately, the competition that he's got is of a lot, you know, a lot higher quality maybe. And I think there's a few players that maybe, if it wasn't for injuries, could have been in the conversation. Johnny Rowe, Josh Sargent, etc., which maybe gives away who I'm going for more in the top two. But yeah, Angus Gunn, thoroughly deserving of a top place in the top three.
Yeah, I agree. He makes my podium. This is probably where it's going to become obvious who we've picked. Second, who are you going to go for?
Yeah, I think we had to pick our top three for the paper a few weeks back, and I maybe went against the grain and went for McLean as number two. I think his consistency in terms of his performances this season, irrespective of where he's been asked to play, you know, he's been deployed at centre back, he's been deployed in central midfield. There's, you know, been times his Norwich career he's had to play at full back, you know, maybe not this season, but certainly at other times, and he's always just got on with it. And always put a solid performance in, you know, 7-8 out of 10 every week sort of thing. And I think the leadership, his loyalty to the football club, he's more than deserving of a place in the top three. I'm you know, I know he's never won it before, and if he won it this season, you know, hands down, he would deserve it as well. But I think the man I've picked at the top is for different reasons, which I'll come on to in just a moment. But yeah, Kenny McLean, number two.
Even as you're talking, I'm changing my mind. I don't know. It's so, I think this is so close. And I think, you know, you can argue it. It probably comes down to what you think is player of the season material. Because if you're going for consistency, and if you're going for, you know, leadership and intangibles and all of those elements, then I think it's Kenny McLean. But in terms of pure quality, I think it's very difficult to now construct an argument against Gabriel Sarro of what he's done this season. And what is it, 24? Is it 24 goal contributions higher than James Maddison, who won it that season? Again, slim pickings. But yeah, I think I'm going to stick to what I put in the paper a while ago and go with Gabriel Sarro second. But I feel even dirty saying that, to be honest. It's really down to personal choice. And so that means I've got Kenny McLean winning it for all of the reasons that you outlined. I think it's the best season that he's had. I think he's obviously had to fill a role in centre-back. I know people are going to shout in terms of statistically he's maybe not quite been there, but I think you have to look at consistency, importance, the role that he's played, the intangibles that he has, the leadership that he's offered, the importance to the side. So, yeah, and by the time I throw this microphone over to you, I will have flip-flopped again and gone for Gabriel Sarro, but I've locked it in now. Sarro 2, McLean 1, I think, which means you've got Gabby Sarro winning it, which, again, I can't argue against.
Yeah, I think I went for this a few weeks back, which at the time, even now it's still a debate in my head, but I think the individual brilliance of that player, obviously it'll be back-to-back titles for him if he picks up the Barry Butler Award. And I think this season he's more than merited it. You know, the goal contributions you mentioned, championship team of the season. He's involved in that. He's been nominated. He won Championship Player of the Month in August. He was nominated again a few months back. He's in the Goal of the Month competition for March.
Oh, he's going to win that, isn't he?
It's just, you know, I just look back at sort of the moments of quality. Last weekend, he's earned them 2 points because of the ability to do what he's done. And I just think over the course of the season, without him, this side is nowhere near it. I think McLean, you know, is a crucial cog in it. But I just think if you took him out of this team, could Norwich still function and be in and around the top six? Don't get me wrong, McLean, fully quality. I do not want him out of this team. But I think, for me, if you lost Sarah out of this team, it's a much bigger blow than McLean. And for those reasons, I've just gone for the Brazilian.
Oh, I think you've won me over, you know. I think either could win it and either would be worthy winners, I think. I think it'll probably be McLean, is my feeling. But, yeah, I think those are the top two. And then, yeah, I would go with Angus. Again, if John Rowe would have had a full season, if Josh Sargent would have had a full season, I think it would be a different conversation. But our conversation is done. Adam, thank you very much for joining me. Holty's been providing some extra company to my right. Thank you all very much for watching and for listening as well. Plenty more content available over at pinker.com. Give us your thoughts on the Premier League conversation. Give us your top three for player of the season as well. We want to hear it. You can obviously get in touch with us via whatever medium you're on at the moment, via socials, all of those good stuff. You know where to find us. We've got a Football Manager competition, which you spoke about last week. That is still open until later this week, the 26th. All of the details will be below this video, and also we're on last week's podcast, and I think the team news video if you're looking for something a little bit more recent as well. Enjoy your week. We'll shrug off this Bristol City stalemate pretty quickly, and then all steam ahead to Swansea. Thank you. See you soon.